Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Chief, you know there's two things in this world I hate to miss. Lakers game and Rich Rossi live. You've got to be cuckoo to miss this show. You know what I mean, pal? Hey, where do you get a load of what Rich is going to talk about today?
What we're going to talk about today is an amazing guest, Carl Crew. He's played Jeffrey Dahmer in The Secret Life of Jeffrey Dahmer. He owns the coolest club in North Hollywood, CIA, the Center for Abnormal Arts. He's a ringmaster, and the LA Times has called him the P.T. Barnum of Burbank Boulevard. We'll be back in about 20 seconds with the legendary Renaissance man, Carl Crew, coming at you live today. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Carl. So elated you're here today.
Oh, my pleasure to be here.
Well, let's jump right into it. Tell us how you ended up playing Jeffrey Dahmer, the serial killer, on film.
Well, I've always been in horror comedy movies, all kinds of crazy stuff. I used to be a mortician. I was an apprentice embalmer for 5 years, and I lived at a mortuary, so I kind of had that background, and had a lot of strange run-ins with other serial killers during that part of my life, like the Trailside Killer. I was in a mortuary in San Rafael, and I used to go hiking in the woods of Muir Woods with a friend of mine, and we ran right into the Trailside Killer, and he was up there running around, walking around with guns, and I'm like, yeah, and I ran down to the phone and called the cops, and we're sitting there waiting for the cops to get there, and a girl came up, and she says, oh, what's going on up there? I go, don't go up there. There's somebody with a gun. Oh, yeah, okay, right. And she went up there, and then bang, and she got killed.
Wow.
And what happened is our mortuary buried her. She ended up having their funeral at our mortuary, and the serial killer drove by during the service. His plate, his personalized license plate, was seen by one of the morticians. So this is how creepy that was, you know. So, been surrounded with that in San Francisco where I grew up. You know, the Zodiac Killer as a kid, you know, and all these crazy things. I had a little background in, you know, working with dead bodies. So it was kind of a natural. I did a movie called Blood Diner where I played.
Yeah, that's a big cult film, and I know a lot of your listeners are fans of the film. Recently, it showed at the New Beverly. Quentin Tarantino owns the theater there, and the fans loved having you there for the Q&A, huh?
Yeah, we do the Q&A every time we come down there. They play. There was a 50th anniversary of Blood Feast, which is a Herschel Gordon Lewis film, which is based on. It was supposed to be Blood Feast 2, but it kind of took on of a life of its own. You know, I like comedy. It was just a really bizarre film, very bizarre film. And, so if you go to YouTube, you can see Blood Diner Q&A. It's a little bit of that piece, yeah.
Oh, great. That's on YouTube, Blood Diner Q&A.
Yeah.
And one of the things I have to compliment you on, how nuanced your performance is in these films, the Dahmer film, you did what I think Brando did with The Godfather, and then he showed the human side, that he loved his grandkids, that there was this other attractive side to this mobster, and you made Dahmer kind of, well, some people said, you know, that you portrayed Dahmer kind of charming, kind of handsome, and, you know, and they just wanted him to be played as completely horrific, but I think that's the choice a lesser actor would have made, because he had to have something about him that made all these people want to go with him, right, other than just offering them the money.
Absolutely. It was just very strange. I wrote the script from police interviews with Jeffrey, so it's pretty heinously accurate. And we came out 2 years before the Jeremy Renner film, and the director hated me for doing that.
The director of the Renner film?
Yeah, he said a lot of bad things about me. I'm like, whatever. And I was really, after working, you know, writing and producing and going through the whole roller coaster of making the film, you know, I was like, wow, somebody else spent some time doing a Dahmer film. I had never seen it. So I sat down and I was like, yeah, let's see it. Whew. I mean, he jumps over a fence at the end. I mean, what's going on? I mean, he was busted. You know, he wasn't even murdered when we finished our film. Mm. He was still in prison.
Yeah.
Actually, Jeffrey Dahmer saw my film in prison.
Wow.
I did the Maury Povich show and a bunch of shows, and I met the victim's family members.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them I became friends with, and I had a long conversations with on the phone for a long time. And she's the only one that went down to see Jeffrey in prison.
Mm. Did she really?
Yeah, and her brother was killed by Jeffrey. But she kind of became obsessed with him. But she went down there and saw him, and I said, wow, what? She says, the guard showed him your movie.
Mm.
I said, well, what did he say? He goes, well, he said that he just scooted his chair really close to the TV, turned around and said, that the guy that played me? And they said, yeah. And he goes, hmm? And he just stared at it the whole time, and that was it.
Mm.
So I got a chance to meet him. I didn't want to meet him.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to meet him. I did talk to his stepmom on the phone a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Very sweet, very nice.
Yeah, the parents seem like really nice people, and they tried to deal with the notoriety as best they could to even help other people to identify what are the symptoms or the characteristics of someone that's going to do this, so
right.
that to try to prevent it in the future.
Right, and when the whole thing, I mean, it sounds kind of iconic and dumb, but we say, you know, only Jeffrey Dahmer knows what really happened, and if we can help just one person being a little more aware of their situation and not be murdered, you know, that's kind of the key of, but it sounds ridiculous, but it's true. I mean, it's like, you know, you got to be aware of what's going on and the kooky people around you, you know. I mean, it was a trip, though. It was really, really an intense roller coaster ride, and I mean, I just got cast in another cannibal film. Yeah.
You're getting typecast, huh?
I hope not. But this is not even a horror movie. It's called Eat Me, and it's about the cannibal, the guy who was arrested in Germany 5 years ago for convincing a person to become a willing victim, somebody who was dying. And, yeah, and, like, I mean, I grew up in horror movies, and I used to be a mortician, and I love all the creepy stuff, but, child, I blanched when I read this script. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, really, I did. I really did. But
well, that's saying a lot, Carl, because the Dahmer film is really hard to watch. I think a lot of us, like, we're closing our eyes at certain moments there because you show the whole thing. And
well, we really don't. We really don't show the whole thing. I mean, we take artistic license a couple times. There's one time where Dahmer never put a live person into a barrel of acid.
I remember that scene, yeah.
But I kind of expanded on that. It's a little more horrific. But the funny thing is we shot it in some of the scenes were shot in Malibu.
Really?
Yeah, wow. And in Oxnard, and there's a lot of wheat fields out there, and it was kind of looked like a very back east, but some of the stuff was shot right in Malibu, and I had, like, these celebrities sitting off at coffee shops, you know, just watching the whole thing, and I won't even say their name, but some really big ones that came up and said, hey, you know, it's kind of funny. But it was just a really weird experience, very low budget. But like I say, it was very, very much accurate. You know, everyone jumped on it when it came out first and tried to destroy it. But then after about a year, we started getting some really excellent reviews about the authenticity of everything. And even though the quality was not, you know, high budget, even the LA Times, Kevin Thomas said it went much deeper into the psychological aspects of Dahmer than the Jeremy Renner did.
Yeah, I thought that really for cool. Sure, because you showed what I didn't know was that it was this loneliness and this inability to connect with people that he made him do this. In his mind, of course, this is very distorted thinking and irrational thinking, but in his mind, he was keeping these people with him and he didn't want them to leave.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah, really sad. We really couldn't portray him. We could only portray him about 10% of how bad he really was, because it was really intense. So we tried to write a balance between telling the truth and being a little bit exploitational on the horror movie side, but I wanted to keep it real, you know, keep it like, you know, have some respect for the family members and not really say the names too much of who it is and what's going on. And I got to meet, you know, when we did Maury Povich, that was a whole hour show, and it was, I was kind of on the offensive, yeah. You know, because,
was that back in New York, or?
Oh, yeah, and it was before all the paternity tests and all that stuff. It was, like, in the day when he was really doing some stuff,
yeah.
Yeah, there was like a big lady, her name was Janetta, and she was the representation of the family. And she was like, man, she went nuts. You know, it was like, I love a good debate. I mean, I'm a debater. And I'm like, and she was on stage going, you Jeffrey Dahmer number two. And I'm like, what? You know, I'm an actor. No, you Jeffrey Dahmer number two. And like, I mean, the amazing thing she was, well, we won't get in all this money. Yeah, we won't. Where's our share of the money? It's like, you know, Hollywood comes swooping in, doing all this stuff. And I'm like, wow, I was so impressed to be called Hollywood. You know, we're just like a little tiny company, you know. And but one of the things we did, I mean, I've always been the Barnum of Burbank Boulevard. I know how to promote in a certain way. I've learned the hard way. And one of the things we did before we started shooting is we let it leak out to the trades that we're shooting this in secret. And that was a big, big deal. I had a fax machine go off for a month and broke because so many faxes came in on it. It was just like
wow.
Hotbed.
That was brilliant. It's like when Jesus healed people and he said, now keep this secret.
Yeah,
don't,
exactly.
Don't tell anyone.
That's exactly right. Well, Chad, it was great. It really worked good. And we got a lot of attention and press. I mean, it didn't ever make it to the theaters. You know, I mean, it had to go to video, unfortunately. But it was not done for video. It was done for the theaters. And
shot in 35 millimeter
yeah,
and look,
yeah.
You know, looks great.
It's really grimy, Rick Bowen was the director, and we had another director before, and he just wanted to, like, you know, do as exploitational as possible. Well, we want to have a gay sex scene before every murder. I'm like, okay, bye bye. You know, it's like that's so not necessary, and even showing a lot of the carnage was not necessary. I mean, I love Hitchcock. When he shows kind of around the carnage, and your mind fills in the worst
part.
Yeah,
like the psycho stabbing scene.
Thank
we don't
you.
Really ever see the knife going in there.
Exactly, but you feel it, you know, and that's what I wanted to do. And so Rick Bowen did a brilliant job coming in, and you know, he's really done a lot of record producing, and he was just kind of one of his first things. But he had a sensibility that was really good, and it was a pleasure to work with him and this stuff. Yeah, wow, that was just an amazing roller coaster. It's all, you know, when you do low budget, there's all these crazy people you have to work with, and I auditioned 500 people for the roles. You know, it was like mind numbing, and it was like, well, what we got was not the best, you know, but there was a couple really good standouts.
Yeah.
That was just, really, I wore every possible hat you could wear. But
yeah.
I had a great team, you know, and I'm not a megalomaniac. I love a teamwork. That's what I learned growing up in the theater. I did 17 years of repertory theater growing up in San Francisco. And you learn what it is to be a team player. You know, you work with other people that are equally as talented, and you create something in a group effort. You know, I love that. I love that. And that's what I do today, so...
Well, it's interesting, your nightclub, which I've performed as a guitarist in hundreds and hundreds of clubs, and it's the most interesting club, you know, ever. And this kind of grew out of your film work. I learned that your CIA nightclub in North Hollywood, you first had this building to distribute your films, and then somehow an Oscar party or somehow it morphed into becoming this cool underground nightclub, huh?
Well... What happened was I ran into an old friend of mine who we used to be morticians together at this mortuary like years ago, and we had two student apartments above the mortuary, and we ran it, and we were just kind of the students there. But I ran into him like years later down here in Hollywood. I go, let's make a company and sell my movies. He goes, yeah. So we took over this property, and we set up Millennium Film Distribution. And we were just eaten alive by the phone company, you know, back when Ma Bell was charging thousands of dollars, and also the UPS, and they just ate us alive. And we were just thinking about, well, what are we going to do? And
Why was the phone company eating you alive? I don't quite get that.
Well, back in the day, you used to have to pay thousands of dollars for phone charges. You know, that's all been gone down the tubes now.
Oh,
now
okay,
it's 40 bucks a month.
Yeah.
You know, back then it was thousands of dollars. You know, they used to suck you dry. I look forward to the day that the power company is going to go the way of Ma Bell, where it's not going to be thousands and thousands of dollars paid to, you know, it just sucks the life out of every business and every home. It's just the power. I didn't want to get into it, but they're in a monopoly, and they're really, really hurting everyone really bad. But anyway, So what are we going to do? And my friend, he's a producer, and he goes, oh, I want to have an Academy Awards party. I said, okay. And we set it all up, and we did it all up, and we're all kooky artists anyway, so we went in and just dressed a place, and it was a huge success. And at the end of the night, we looked at it like, my friend just goes, duh. And I'm like, yeah. And we look at my friend, other friend, Bob, and he's like, yeah. And we understood very clearly we need to do a club. So we became the CIA, California Institute of Abnormal Arts. And it was based on the, you know, I did 20 years of just research on conspiracy stuff and CIA mind control and all that stuff. So it was kind of based on that, but it was kind of more a play on words. But, and it's all about, you know, maximalism. That's what we're about. Over the top everything. You know, art, performances, music, puppets, magic, freak show, you know, whatever is that you won't see anywhere else. That's what we've always been about.
Yeah, it's always written up as, you know, one of the cool, it wins a bunch of the polls in the LA Weekly all the time, and it has this kind of almost forbidden quality. You know, you know, the legends of what you have there. The dead clown is one of the big legends, and the two-headed baby, the sword that pierced Christ's side, all that stuff. How did the oddities part
We started out with, you know, I used to have an antique store in the Haight-Ashbury 2,000 years ago, and I dealt a lot of crazy stuff, neon clocks and jukeboxes and slot machines, My tastes have always been, you know, I'd see these weird things everywhere I'd go to all the flea markets and garage sales and everything. And finally, I just started converting from all my antiques to things from freak shows and things that held a little more mystery. To me, the freak show still holds a mystery. You know, there's not everything is explainable. So we started gathering a few things. I met a lawyer who and this family who had this dead clown on their ranch. They're a circus family. They come back every year and do another freak show, and then we have another memorial service for Achille Chatrier. 20 years ago, they were saying, oh, yeah, we have our dead uncle, great uncle, he's on our ranch. I'm like, are you serious? I said, bring him down. Let's install him. And they did. So he's been there for 20 years. And he is, his name, Achille Chatrier, he was really a piece of white trash, but he changed his name to try to get in on the French thing, you know. And he's much more famous now dead than he was alive. But he was a dead Shriner. His last request was that he would always be on display. So they had him hermetically sealed in the casket in clown makeup, and he's wearing his Shriner's Parade outfit from the first Shriner's Parade in 1906 in Detroit. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And he looked great from 1912. I mean, we have two other bodies now. One of them is Fat Choi. Fat Choi is from 1914, and he's embalmed with pure mercury, and he looks like crap. But, you know, he's really cool. He's an infamous legend of the magic world of 1914. He performed for underground opium dens in San Francisco. Can you imagine what that audience was like? Yeah. They called him the Chinese Weasel because he was a ruthless antique dealer, which I am too, so I love that. And he had a monkey for an assistant. And the monkey outlived him by 14 years. When it passed, they stuffed him, and I'm getting the monkey to sit right next to him because I know the family.
Wow. Well, those of you listening, if you haven't been to CIA, it's one of those clubs that almost has this mysterious feel, like you have to have the password to get in. But it's now above ground, and the website is facebook.com/CIAbnormalArts. facebook.com/CIAbnormalArts. You know, it's a club that if you're an L.A. person and you haven't been to, the L.A. Weekly, the press polls are always say this is the most unique club you just got to see. So let's open it up for questions. You can email questions to richardrossilive@gmail.com, and you can call in questions right there on the number there, 347-637-2379, 347-637-2379. And after a brief break for program identification, we'll be back with the P.T. Barnum of Burbank Boulevard Carl crew right back at you in a few seconds at Richard Rossi Live.
You search, you probe, your mind, your spirit becomes weary. You find yourself on a journey to find a talk show, not just an ordinary talk show, but a Christian talk show, unlike anything the mind could fathom. Suddenly, your search comes to an end, for up ahead, there's a signpost, your next stop, the Rich Rossi Live Zone.
Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. We're back with Carl Crew, and let's go to line one, and let's see who we have here. Looks like we have Edith in Pomona.
Yeah, I feel these oddities, as you call them, corpses and different things, could bring about some negative spiritual energy, and I wanted to know why you are promoting something like this.
Well, let me speak to that first. You may all be shocked to know that Carl Crew is a person of faith, and so he's a person who is, actually has things that promote his faith there. He has something related to Christ with the sword that pierced Christ. So what do you say to kind of the religious objection that you're opening up to this kind of demonic evil energy? Do you ever have religious people afraid of your club because of this, or they question you because of this, Carl?
Oh, I have plenty of people afraid of the club, and the whole concept of really the club was to create an interdimensional space where you can just get away from all the regular stuff, anything regular, and just to take a break, and just see stuff you've never seen before and kind of open your eyes to the different possibilities of things around you. I've studied all this stuff for years, all the elements of the occult and stuff, but from a biblical point of view, which turns on a light and you see all the cockroaches run, So, I'm fearless about talking about any of this stuff with anybody, and it's just, there's nothing I can tell anybody that's going to change their opinion, but I sure like to, turn a light on for certain types of things. I mean, we do have a lot of very strange stuff, and I really enjoy, giving the tours. We give tours on nights where we don't have live shows, and we go from everything from our dead folk to... we have two-headed babies, we have shrunken heads, we have all kinds of crazy stuff. And, there's a whole world of amazing stuff out there, and there is this very real spiritual element to a lot of it, and that's one of my favorite subjects is the supernatural. I've had a lot of supernatural experiences, never at the mortuary, though. I never had any supernatural experiences at the mortuary. It was only after. Yeah. So,
did working at the mortuary... how did it affect your view of death or funerals? Like, how would you want a funeral to be for someone you cared about, or how did it affect your looking at that?
Well, I mean, I don't think open casket is cool. I mean, when my grandmother died, they just put her in a box, and that's how I want to remember her. Live and talking and laughing and the fun I had with her. And when it comes to me, just throw me in a box. I mean, I don't even want to be embalmed, Some people talk about, I was on Gary Garver's show, and we were talking about it, and he was talking about cremation. And we had a crematorium at one of our sister places where we're part of the place where I worked. And, you ever seen a body burn? It's the most horrific thing you've ever seen. And there goes my phone. Sorry. It's just nonstop. Okay. Anyway.
Someone's calling for a tour already.
Yeah, already. No, but it's really a horrific thing, and I do not suggest that anyone, it's the coolest thing to do. You have your asses sprinkled over, blah, blah, blah. It's horrific. I just would never want to be part of that at all.
And I've heard of mortuaries being busted where the ashes are mixed together. You don't even know that you really, really, in fact, got the ashes of the person.
Well, actually, that happened to my grandmother where she was buried. It was a mortuary or a cemetery in Glendale where they switched everything around and blah, blah, blah. But, it's like you're dead at that point. It's just a shell, And I have definite beliefs about about an afterlife. This is kind of just a preface to eternity, you know what I'm saying? So this is just the, it's a dry run, but it's the most important dry run you can possibly do, because what you choose is how you're going to end up. You know, you make choices in this life, and that's going to, it's going to affect your eternity. So you got to be careful, child. Amen.
Amen.
Yeah.
And the reality show, tell us about the reality show that's happening.
Well, we had a company come in and try to do a reality show. We got a lot of crazy stuff going on. We do a lot of, we've been doing sideshows for 20 years. Midgets, fire, sword swallowing. I love it. And I love the circus so much. We do a lot of stuff like that. But we had a guy come in with a company and try to do a reality show a couple years ago at our place. And I was like, we did it a couple times. I'm like, bye-bye. And he didn't get it. He didn't get it. He was like, terrible. So I've recently been approached by two, you know, pretty big companies, and they want to do it. I said, well, okay, I will do it and bring it to you. So we're doing two pilots, and we're going to take them to them. And we started shooting, and we had a freak show recently. Brilliant. These people are brilliant. And we're going to be shooting all our best people from the last 20 years in the next month. You know,
wow, that's going to be really interesting.
The Radioactive Chicken Heads and Vincent Wolf with Freak Show Deluxe, and we're bringing in a lot of the luminaries like Darren Malfi, you know, brilliant guy from World of Wonder. Just a lot of the best. Matt Scott, one of the most brilliant puppeteers, you know, along with Scott Land, who did Team America.
Scott's great. In fact, Scott made a puppet of a dear friend of mine that passed away, Carl Ballantyne.
Well, Carl Ballantyne, yeah. I got to meet Carl at the castle.
Yeah.
Okay, we sat at the bar and talked, and he was so happy that my name was Carl, too. And I got a great picture of him. I never found the picture. But, I have a picture of me holding the Ballantyne puppet. And, you know, Scott taped the whole show that he did, the magic show, and he has the original recordings of Carl
really
doing
wow.
it, and that's what he uses when he does the puppet show.
Oh, that's
Scott
fantastic.
Is brilliant.
We'll have to let Scott know we mentioned him on the show today.
Oh, he's so brilliant. Yeah, he's one of my
and
favorites.
By the way, you know, I had the honor of directing Carl in his last appearance in a feature film. I filmed Sister Amy.
Oh, yeah.
He's Amy went as a missionary to China.
Yeah.
So we shot him as this realtor in China, basically making the deal for her to rent a house in China. And for the exteriors, we shot Chinatown, which I know you love Chinatown.
Oh, I love Chinatown.
So I'll have to tell his daughter, Sarah, that we mentioned Carl
so cool.
on the show today.
He's brilliant. Yeah. I go way back. I go to McHale's Navy. You say McHale's Navy. No one knows who that is. You know, but Gruba, come on.
Gruba.
Yeah. I mean, that made me roar for years. So it was such an honor to actually meet him.
Oh, yeah.
Nicest guy.
My wife and I met him at Magic Castle, too.
Yeah.
In fact, he came and sat beside us with a lady friend, a jazz singer that was a friend of his named, I think, Gracie. And my wife knows me so well. We've been married over 30 years. But I can meet A-list stars and not bat an eyelash. But when I meet someone that I loved as a little boy, like Gruber, I'm in a whole different
place.
I know.
And, you become a child. Yeah.
Yeah, and she said, you got that look on your face.
Yeah.
She says, someone you loved as a kid has just walked through the restaurant. She knew it right
Exactly. That's so cool.
So we ended up going to the magic shows with Carl,
oh, cool.
and I told him about my film, and he said, when you're shooting, let me know. I'll come and do something.
So cool.
You know?
Yeah, he's brilliant. I've run into him. That's the cool thing about living in Hollywood, because I get to meet sometimes people. Like, I got to meet Paul Rubens, you know, brilliant, brilliant guy. Brilliant.
Yeah.
And Elvira, and I got to meet Willie Chambers, you know, from the Chamber Brothers, you know, recently. And just people like that, you know, just fantastic. It's just legends. So, yeah, love it.
Well, it's been such a joy to have you here. And for those of you listening, if you haven't been to the CIA Club in Burbank Boulevard there, but just I guess, east of Lancashire, go to the website, facebook.com/CIAbnormalArts. And, we're just down to like 60 seconds. But one question that came in by email, this might put us a couple seconds over, but I guess it would be interesting to hear your thoughts. Someone wrote in about Dahmer having a religious conversion in the jail. What do you make of that?
I think he did become a Christian in the jail. Whether it was real or not, we don't know, but it kind of tells the story. It's like people think, I'm not good enough to become a Christian. Well, child, if Jeffrey Dahmer's in heaven, everyone could go. You know what I'm saying? So don't worry about it. Yeah, I believe that it happened, and which is a really amazing thing, that looks how low you can go and you can still be forgiven. Amen.
Amen. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Carl, for coming on the show. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Richard Rossi Live. Until next time, go with God and be blessed.